It's back for 2014, the Football Sack Podcast for Brazil, brought to you by Banking on Football.
It's another glorious defeat podcast. Once again, we are proud, and once again, we are pointless at the World Cup, but once again...
We're still ahead of Spain.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, nice way to round that out.
Top three.
We're in the top three of the group. We are in the Champions League positions, which is good. I think we're in the third automatic spot, and Spain are in the qualifier. So welcome to the Football Sat podcast, everybody. My name is Jack Quigley, and opposite me to my left is Christian Leyland. Hi.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Jack. Hi, Pat.
And Pat is here as well. Pat Flaherty.
Hello.
And we are going to talk all about the Socceroos' performance overnight at the World Cup. We'll also touch briefly on Spain, Chile, and Cameroon, Croatia. And we have a special guest joining us from the AFL, and specifically the Collingwood Football Club. Lachie Keefe will be on the show. So
excellent, looking forward to that.
Yeah, stick around. Let's jump straight into it, guys. We have played our second match at the World Cup. We have lost again, but we've taken the Dutch all the way and scored the greatest goal in the history of the world in the process. Fantastic.
Amazing goal. Amazing game. Very entertaining, very edgier seat or edgier bed, however you were watching it.
Yes, I was couch. Yeah.
Sweat. I was just sweating.
Yeah, just sweating. Yeah.
It was like 3 degrees and I was still sweating.
Yeah, I forgot how cold it was when we scored. We'll go through the game one by one, and we'll get to Tim's goal. So let's start from the top. The first thing I noticed about the game was that the cameraman loved the zoom in. If any player held the ball for more than 2 seconds, you couldn't see anything other than him in the shot. It was extremely frustrating. I found that frustrating.
You know what I find?
It would have been a rugby league cameraman. You know, the ball's in, you just zoom in.
Yeah, is that what they do? I don't watch enough rugby league.
Do you know what I'm disappointed with the camera work in this World Cup?
What's that?
You know, today I read that Brazil has got the number one in hottest women in the world.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen any shots of hot women. You watch the cricket in South Africa?
South Africa, I was going to say, yeah.
Every 2 seconds, there's a hot girl on the TV. Actually, today, there was one hot girl that got zoomed in on, but she was a MILF. She had a baby.
Yeah, it was Mila Jedinak's wife.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. I'll drink her bathwater.
South African cricket broadcasters, they're shameless, aren't they? They don't even care.
Yeah.
It's like, well, all right, cut away. It's been there a long time.
Anything
more? Oh, a couple more seconds. Well, he isn't bowling yet. I'll cut back before he lets go of the ball. So, yeah.
So, as directors of Brazil, we need to see more women.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's that. Another thing I noticed was that, remember, in the Chile game, Australia had to wear gold shorts because apparently green clashes with blue, and yet today, green and blue shorts. What gives?
What's going on?
FIFA, inconsistent.
They would have heard our podcast. They would have hated being compared to fashion Nazis. They said, you know what, guys? The Football Sack podcast has shown us the way.
Yeah, let's ease up a bit.
So you're welcome, Socceroos.
Yeah. So everybody, and it's good because that goal by Tim Cahill is going to get shown for decades. So I wanted us to be in our right kit.
To be fair, right? We actually kind of looked good as Sweden. So.
Yeah, that, good point. Yeah. Although Sweden have blue in their kit, which we didn't have.
That's true.
We just kind of look washed out. Let's go into the first goal. So Australia, I thought we looked fantastic up until the first goal, and it was Bresciano gave the ball away, and just Alex Wilkinson, not the quickest player in the world, and I don't want to attack him because you don't expect your teammate to give the ball away, but and up against Iron Robin, it was forget it straight. And he
tried to tackle him.
Yeah, and they said, "Well, give away the tactical foul." I think Foster said at the time. I think he tried,
but
Robin, for once in his life, decided not to go down because he knew he was going to score.
Yeah, exactly right.
So, what did you make of it, Christian, from a tactical point of view?
It's just, it's the unfortunate. You can't give away that ball. When you do, you transition. Your first point has to be that first player close to the ball has to get in front. We didn't do that, so they got to get away from us. They went round player. That's just pace happening. It happens. And then, some people have been giving Ryan some stick for that goal. But to be honest, if Robin's just got nothing but space between you and the goal, and you're the keeper, you don't have a chance.
No, so. That's right. I certainly didn't attribute any blame for the first goal to him. Yeah. Certainly not. We'll come on to the. You did? You thought so?
I thought he could have made a better effort.
I don't know what more I could have done to
me. No, the only thing I thought you may be able to say is he went down quite early. But that could be just the fact that he knows Robin likes to keep those shots low. A lot of Robin doesn't blast balls up into the top of the net a lot of the time, so he may have done homework. And with Ange Postecoglou, there's every chance that they did do homework. So that was the first goal.
What I'd like to point out, though, is, of course, that our tactical analysis of yesterday, it was 100% correct.
Yep.
Where Ange Postecoglou just went, because that wasn't actually Alex Wilkinson being slow. It's just like, all right, Ange's tactics, I just let him score.
Just sit back. Yep.
That's why Ryan didn't save the ball.
Yeah.
1-0 down, and what happened as soon as we were 1-0 down? We were the best team in the park.
I didn't have time to text you saying, right, we've done the first thing. We'd already scored before I texted you saying, all right, good. So let's get on to the Cahill goal. How good is it? And I said for the Van Persie goal, I judge a goal how good it is by how many times it would take you to do it again. We would be there for weeks.
I would never be able to do that ever.
No, absolutely. With your weaker peg. Yeah. And you do see those goals scored occasionally, but sometimes they are off a shin. And sometimes they almost score because they mishit the ball and it slices. Cahill has hit the middle of the ball with the middle of his boot.
Yeah.
Just a wonderful
went straight
goal.
Over the goalkeeper's head. He had no chance.
It was in before he put an arm up.
Exactly right.
And just a wonderful moment. And we want, it was SportsCenter's number one play on their top 10 countdown in America. We wanted in this World Cup, look, if we're not going to get out of the group, let's make an impact in the games and be counted at this tournament. We've certainly done that with a game to go. We've scored three goals, and one of them is just...
It wasn't really an Australian type of goal, was it? Like, we don't see those type of goals scored by Australians. It's normally by the...
Scott Chipperfield scored a volley against South Africa in a friendly in, like, 2003. That's the last screamer I can remember Australia scoring.
Was it Bresciano versus Bahrain? The
the scissor kick. Mm. Right, when was that? That was probably post-2003.
That was about 06, I think.
Yeah, it was. It was like an
Asian Cup qualifier.
Yeah.
When he wasn't old.
Yeah, but still looks exactly the same.
But I still actually think he's better now than he was back then, to be honest.
So do I, yeah. Bresciano burst on in the international scene for Australia and scored like every time he played, mostly because we were playing Oceania qualifiers at the time. But yeah, I think he's more reliable now. You know exactly what you're going to get from him every game.
I remember he got a big reputation, especially when he scored the goal, which sort of got us into the extra time for the Uruguay qualifier.
Yep.
But actually, his performances at the 06 World Cup were quite poor. And he gave away a lot of ball, didn't really create much, and I think he was just a bit sort of overwhelmed because he wasn't playing against that lower tier opposition he was used to. And it really, even though he showed glimpses along those years, it wasn't until about 2-3 years ago where he started being quite solid at the international arena. So I'm really glad to see him, in his twilight, because I thought when he wasn't...
It was almost after he took that break, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's the marker. He missed the Asian Cup, or took the break from the Asian Cup, and everyone thought, well, that's fresh gone. And he came back as good as he's ever been, and he's gone through a lot of trials and tribulations since then with the whole FIFA things and everything. So, look, hats off to him.
He's still playing well, even
absolutely
even with all that.
Yeah. The decision to play Matt Mackay in midfield shocked some people. A lot of people thought that James Holland was going to get that
that's
role.
What I thought it was going
to
happen.
I was surprised, certainly, but I straight away thought it was a good call. You've got Matt Mackay, who the coach knows what he's going to get from him, and he's played two grand finals off the top of my head for Brisbane Roar. So, pressure atmosphere, he knows, he's been there before.
Yeah, so it's what I love is he can't get a start for a substandard Scottish team. He can start in the World Cup against the Netherlands.
Yes.
So that says a lot about Scottish football.
But I do think we really did miss Milligan
Tom
today.
Tom Rogic can't get a game either.
I think we really missed Milligan today.
Well, see, I liked what Mackay brought. He brought a lot of energy. He's a different style of player to the Milligans of Yadanax.
Yes, that's right.
Against
he's a different player.
Against the Dutch, that worked really well. And that's why I think... Because Milligan was never going to play midfield against the Netherlands. He was going to go on to right back and take French's spot. So, Mackay was probably always going to play, even before Milligan was touted as an injury, because he's that style of player who would disrupt the Dutch playing out and disrupt them in midfield, because that's exactly what he did.
Mm. One more thing to mention from the commentary before in the first half, the Bresciano chance. We're just praising him. Now let's mention the chance he blazed over the bar.
He had a couple, didn't he?
Yeah, there was the first shot that was deflected and the second one where Lecky jinked and then did a really nice cutback.
Yep.
Ange Postecoglou cutback. You'd be proud of that.
Yes, it was the first cutback I've seen all World Cup.
Yeah, and almost brought a goal. But it was just rolling and Bresciano arrived late. David Bashir described it as taking it on the volley. And I've heard him do this before, and I just genuinely think, I don't think he knows what on the volley means. I think he thinks on the volley means first time.
Yeah, because, I mean, but that explains why I said Cahill scored off a tap-in, so.
Is that what he said?
No.
We'll cut that out.
No, we won't.
Okay, I have a little bit of audio to play for you, gentlemen, because I know that we all love SBS's social hub coverage. Mm. And there was a little tidbit last night. We all remember, I think his name's like Brendan Shakes, is the guy they crossed to. We all remember his can't stand up, can't sit down from Star Casino. I don't know where he was last night, but he was at some leagues club somewhere. And this is what he had to say about the atmosphere when they were showing at halftime, showing Cahill's goal over and over again. Let's go through that sentence.
What?
Even every replay was cheered on, even if it was scored for the first time. That's not a sentence. That's not, if it's a replay, it's not happening for the first time.
That's a Madonna song, right?
Yeah, that's, just at halftime I thought, he said it, and it was like the can't stand up, can't sit down thing. I just thought, what? So
shakes, mate. You make no sense.
Yeah, he's got the shakes.
Well, too many beers from watching the State of Origin or something.
Obviously, at the Leagues Club, yeah. There was the whole place went ballistic when they showed the reaction to Cahill's goal, except for one lady who was sitting in the front row who just gave a thumbs up. Did you see that? It was outstanding. It was just that she's too cool. She was like the Mila Jedinak taking the penalty.
She was like Harry Kuehl against the shirt in Uruguay. Everyone's going mental. He just stands in the middle of his arms up.
They're sort of almost like the, yep, we've done it pose. Became quite famous. So, yeah, SBS, master wordsmiths.
Wasn't it good when the commentary cut out?
That was probably the highlight of the when the commentary cut out, I tweeted saying, this World Cup just keeps delivering. Just when you think it can't get any better, it does. So
it's funny because I thought that they were just taking it because for the first like minute or two, they didn't say it cut out. I just thought, all right, there's nothing going on. They're just, you know, they're being quiet. They're just letting us appreciate the game. And I loved it. I thought this was brilliant.
Great
and
commentary.
Then old mate comes in and goes, oh, sorry, the commentary's just cut out.
Yeah, and then Drillich was like trying to do the commentary. I'm like, mate, shut up.
It was terrible. Mate, we would rather listen to crowd noise then. So we'll just kind of talk, Jason, they've crossed it in here.
Let's be honest. We'd rather him just get a Vuvuzela and just play that.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, gee, it was good that 5 minutes of just plain audio. So,
and then we got back, and only one microphone worked. So Foster's there trying to yell into batches of microphone to be heard.
Foster was just talking through like a rolled up piece of paper.
Vuvuzela from
move on. I'd like to also give a special mention to Matt Sparanovic, who we've mentioned in the preview, Christian, you said before the Chile game, he could star. He was fantastic. And again, last night...
He's just comfortable on the ball.
That was a good point, yeah. Pat pointed out a new drinking game. Every time Bashir mentions the fact that Sparanovic is comfortable on the ball, you have to drink.
You watch next game, he'll say it about 10 times within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, he got in there. He likes to get in there early. And say it on the first time, or as he likes to call it, on the volley.
I think it's a case of anybody who's actually watched Sparanovic in person at the stadium will just see his qualities, whether it's an A-League game, whether it's when he's playing in Germany, or whether he's playing in the Middle East. He's just class. And I mean, we've got to remember, this guy, he won a German Cup final against Bayern Munich when he was barely past his 20s.
He was at Nuremberg.
Correct. He's very, very young. Yeah, he's got this experience. His technical ability is the best of any Australian. And
has played in Japan as well.
I mean, which is quite a technical league. Mm. So I don't think it was a surprise to people who's watched him half consistently. And it's just a case of, you know, he's very nice. He's actually been discovered by the Australian public. The question is, can Western Sydney Wanderers hold on to him?
I think the Australian public's always been aware of him. They've just sort of been hoping that he'd come good.
I didn't know he was that good.
Yeah. Like,
he's just so silky on the field. He's just great to watch.
Very good on the ball.
On the other note, someone who we predicted would be a flop was Tommy Orr, and he delivered too.
Yeah, and your flop as well, Ben Halloran. But we'll come on to those guys in a bit. We'll cover the goal first. So Bresciano comes off. We don't know yet whether that's an injury or not, but it was much earlier than we expected him to come off. Oli Bozanic comes on in his place, an edge masterstroke. Like a minute later, he wins the penalty. So. I know it's supposed to be deliberate handball, Christian, and this is something that you tend to be quite a stickler for, but you can't tell me you weren't going up for handball for that one.
Mate, they called the penalty, and I wanted to watch the replay. I saw the replay, and I wasn't convinced, but being Australian, I'll very much take it.
This falls into the category of probably not correct, but they are given. So where do you sit on that argument, mate?
Honestly, from a purely referee's perspective, it shouldn't have been given.
Mm.
But in saying that, you know, your decisions, they even out over the course of maybe not a tournament, World Cup,
sure. We're owed a few World Cup
but
decisions.
But that's it. Over football history, your decisions will weigh up. And I mean, we say those decisions are given, therefore it's admissible, but I think that's the thing. They shouldn't be given, so they shouldn't be admissible. You know, we need to cut those wrong decisions out. In saying that
prevention
that,
is the best cure.
That
really.
Referee was very good.
I thought he was excellent. Yeah, I didn't notice him all game. Like the penalty he took centre stage, and obviously got a bit of airtime for Cahill's yellow card. But the rest of the game went by without me. I can't even tell you what colour outfit he was wearing.
We're getting some of the 50-50 decisions.
Yeah.
Which is a change.
I just think, I'm not saying he's good because he was biased towards. I think he was consistent. His rulings were almost always correct. I mean, that Cahill yellow card was yes. Cahill's going absolutely. Around being a thug to everyone, if you're really honest. And, you know, player management was obviously good, and his position was fine. So very top marks to him, because, again, credit where credit's due, and he was one of the best performers on the pitch that night.
Let's talk about the penalty. Mile Jedinak, who I didn't want to say it on air on yesterday's podcast, so I waited until we were off air because I didn't want people to bet and blame me.
So now he brags.
That's right, absolutely.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing.
But these guys will vouch for me, and Pat, I believe you got in on the wager. Yes. Christian didn't.
Correct, I didn't.
I did say I can see us winning a penalty against Holland, although my logic was I thought they would try to nullify Tim Cahill's aerial threat by climbing all over him, which they did a little bit in the first half. But we did get a penalty, and I knew Mile would be on penalty duty, so 11-1, filled the wallet.
First Palace player to ever score in the World Cup as well.
Is it really? Mm. Good stat. Mm. There you go. So let's talk about his penalty. The guy has ice in his veins. How was he? Cool as a cucumber.
I've been crapping myself.
Yeah, but the keeper tried to do the delaying tactics and went off and had a drink of water. And I felt so confident that he was going to score. I don't know why. I felt for a player who in the past I've been a bit iffy about his passing accuracy, and it's still not great. Let's be honest, his short passes are good, but his long passes, he still gives the ball away a lot. It just always felt like he was going to score that. It was a really nice feeling.
It was similar to Craig Moore's penalty in Croatia, not in terms of the style it was taken, but just you knew it was going in.
Yeah, it's funny that how often sort of defensive midfielders and defenders tend to be the most solid penalty takers. I don't know why. You just would assume that a striker... I think Alan Shearer once said he can't understand why strikers don't want to take every penalty. It's a free shot at goal, which makes sense, but yeah.
So I think the best penalty taker in the world is Mario Balotelli. He's... fantastic.
He's only like missed one or something.
In his entire life.
Yeah.
Joe Hart told a story because Joe Hart used to practice penalties with him every day at training. He says they're practicing every day after training for whatever the 2 years Balotelli was there. He said he only ever saved one. And that's because he just closed his eyes and guessed.
Yeah, right.
You try to work it out.
He just figured he'd get it right eventually. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Well, to be honest, I think goalkeepers should probably do that tactic more often. Bosnic says he goes by the planted foot. Whichever way the toe is pointing, if your toe's open, you're more likely to go to the far post, and if it's closed, you're trying to whip it across your body.
I think Bosnic though played in a sort of an age just before it got really technical with stats and things like that. Mm. So that would have been his old. That was his tactic. Where these days, every goalkeeper's coach
you've got info
has
on
every stat of every penalty taker everywhere, and you'll see. Was it in the Champions League final with Chelsea? Peter Cech had, or was it Van der Sar? Van der Sar had that piece of paper in his pocket. She pulled out, so he knew where all the Chelsea's penalty takers were going to put the balls.
I really like in the Premier League of late. I think it was last season, maybe the season before. On some of the broadcasts, if there's a penalty, they'll do the camera from behind the penalty taker and put on the goal like green circles and red circles for their previous penalties for where they've been going, like last five penalties, it might say. And it might be Frank Lampard, and three are green in the bottom left, and one is green in the bottom right, and one is red in the bottom right, or something like that.
It's just a numbers game at the end, you know, so it's interesting.
It's
stuff.
A football game, actually. All right, so Pim Verbeek said to a Dutch newspaper he did say that Holland were going to score three, but that didn't take a rocket scientist. What he did say was that Australia definitely wouldn't score. So I spent most of the morning tweeting abuse to Pim Verbeek.
You've met him a couple of times, have you?
No, Holger Osiak. Oh, I've met a couple of times. Pim, yeah. never met Pim with his glued-on Donald Trump hair. he was probably cringing and squirming a little bit uncomfortably at 2-1, I'd imagine, back in the Netherlands.
No, absolutely. I mean, 2-1, we should have gone ahead 3-1. I think we put Chile under a lot of pressure, and at that same period of time in the game against Netherlands, we did the same amount of pressure. The Netherlands would have been... having a lot of trouble with their pants at the time. They would have been...
yeah, we were all over them in the first half, weren't we?
Yeah.
It was just their substitutes just really changed the game.
We're good. Yeah. Lots of good players, have you noticed?
Yes.
Let's quickly talk about the equaliser, Jason Davidson. I just want to go... I love Jason Davidson. In only two games on the world stage, obviously we've seen in little bits and in friendlies and things like that, but I just think he's fantastic. But he didn't step up, and you should always, as a fullback, be in line with your centre-back, shouldn't you?
Correct, and that's when you're playing against those world-class teams, is that it just takes that one moment, one individual mistake, and a nation suffers. And unfortunately, that's what happened. You know, he's been playing great all tournament. He's been played great all that game. But it just takes that one moment, and that moment, we just mind off the matter. He followed Robben when he shouldn't have. Was behind his centre backs, kept everyone on the side, and that's all it took.
It was almost Lucas Neal 2006. Mm. Didn't put a foot wrong
for years.
3.9 games of that tournament, and then just went to ground early once.
Well, I think the same thing happened against Croatia. That goal in the friendly.
There was a little bit of standing. Yeah, because it ricocheted, and there was a couple of players were standing too far back. Yeah,
I think that was a bit different though, because that wasn't so much a lot of poor positioning. It was a case of a bit of misfortune
break.
In there. Whereas,
almost like the Sanchez goal for Chile that you were going through, how there were a lot of players in the box, but it just fell to the one place where there wasn't a player.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So it's 2-2, and we're taking these guys all the way. Here's the moment that killed us. The Lecky miss, and I hate that it's going to go down as a Lecky miss, because he did the best he could with what was a shocking ball from Tommy Orr. Really, in that situation, you have three options. You can shoot, or you can cross low, and you can cross high, and he did none of the three.
I think he was ready to shoot. He was in a position to shoot, and then he saw... Lecky, the free man, and he changed his mind at the last second, which is okay if your technique allows it. But it needed to be either along the ground so he could tap it in, or high enough to head so he could head it in, or that height, but a meter in front of him for a diving.
Yeah, kick. That's right.
But it went straight to his chest in the most awkward position. Mm. And there's not much like he could have done.
He did the best he could to get a chest on target with as much power as he did.
And the truth was, the keeper actually fumbled it. He did the best he could, and I said, he's going to go down as a Lecky miss, but the truth is, that was a shocking delivery by Orr, and it summed up his tournament, to be honest.
It really did, in a decent position, and his technique let him down.
His delivery all game was pretty shocking.
Yeah.
All the set pieces, all the corners, pretty much.
Which is not great, because, Christian, obviously you said at the start of the tournament, he could have a shocker because he's not playing his normal position, which is a number 10.
Correct.
But a number 10 should be able to play these passes, shouldn't they?
You'd think so. You'd hope so. I mean, he was in a very central position when he played that ball.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Even though he was playing on the wing, this is a basic skill set that you should have at that level.
Yeah. So, he's underperformed, whether he's overwhelmed or whether he's just not as good as we think he is. Unfortunately, he's not been good enough.
The other thing was just after the goal, when it was 3-2, he also dived in on Robben just at the top of the D, in just a situation where Robben was going nowhere. He ran down the right, he did his cut back and was drifting, looking for the shot. The shot wasn't on. Everyone was doing their job, and then he just dives in, and could have been a very, very costly foul to give away with Robben van Persie in the opposite team.
I dare say what's happened is he's been told by the coaching staff, he's noticed himself, that Robben cuts in, and when he does that, he's at his most dangerous. So he's got that drilled into his head. So when Robben cuts in, he's only focusing on that instruction, so decides to just cut him down without actually taking note of the game around him and the situation he was in.
Yeah, there's no danger. And
yeah, he's just, that's, you'd like to say that's a characteristic of youth, but the truth is there's so many young players in the world who are composed these days, so you can't lay that blame anymore. It's just he wasn't mature enough for the situation, he's not mature enough for the tournament yet.
Yeah, and disappointing. So we talk about the fact that this is top-level football, you have to take your chances, and we didn't take ours, and almost as quick as we equalised after the first goal of the game, the tournament was no longer in our hands, and almost literally. With Matt Ryan.
Yes, he was my star of the tournament.
Yeah.
At the start of the started Tournament, but now he's turned to Ben Halloran.
He's now your Ben Halloran, yeah. Matty Ryan's going to be disappointed with that. And
I think he's been a bit poor all tournament, to be honest. He's looked a bit overawed. Yeah. Like he only started playing like when the last two saves, they were great.
Yeah, he got down low to...
it was after the mistake he actually started.
De Jong, I think it was. Yeah.
After the mistake, he actually started looking good and like looking like sharp. But before then, he just looked a bit lethargic.
A bit nervy.
Yeah, it's a strange because he has shown good signs. I mean, his distribution has been okay. Obviously, Ange hasn't... We're not playing full total football, so he's doing some long balls, but that's under instruction. I'm sorry,
just before you move on from the distribution, it goes unnoticed. He's good with both feet, which is a very good skill that not a lot of keepers have.
Right. His general play is quite good, and that's one of the big reasons he's there. And his shot stopping ability in the match, with some other saves he's made. It's just, you know, let's be really realistic. That shot should never have happened.
Well, that's a good point. There was a lot of open space and a good look at the goal for Memphis, the man with the most un-Dutch name in the history of the world. He had Memphis on his shirt, but that's his first name, I believe. Yeah, his surname's Tennessee. It's like Dapey or something.
Yeah, that shot should never have happened. He should never have been in that much space. If he was, he needs to be closed down again. So, very similar story to the first goal. The guy's in space. Someone's got to jump in front.
Mm.
It didn't happen. Scored against. Now,
having said that, part of being a goalkeeper is being on your toes, and if a shot comes, not letting it through. And he looked like he was sort of a bit flat-footed.
Well, he looked to have it covered, and then it just curved like a motherfucker at the end.
Is that the technical term?
that's the curriculum term for it. National curriculum. Right. Curve like an MF.
And I think that's how he described it, if you looked at his mouth after the ball went in. Yeah.
If he played a game like the Mexican keeper, we would have won. If he played a game like the Russian keeper, we would have conceded 10. So
yeah, that's a good point. So
he's somewhere in the middle there, and he's still young. And we've got to remember, too, I mean, he only came to the fore about 4 years ago. He was 16. He's made this meteoric rise, and... Yeah, we criticise him and such, but who else is going to play? Langerak hasn't played at all club football this year. The one game he did have under Ranch, he got sent off in about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And Gulakovic isn't there to play, let's be honest.
Well, that sort of almost answers my next question. I was going to say, with a dead rubber in mind and Ryan sort of not at his best for two games, could you see someone else getting a game against Spain, or does Ange want to win too much?
I don't think Ange ever wants to lose. I mean, for example...
Well, obviously he doesn't want to lose.
Well, let's take Brisbane Roar for an example, right? He was in charge of Brisbane Roar for 2 years. Andrew Redmayne got one game. You're telling me that in those whole 2 years, there's only one dead rubber that he could have played?
Yeah, that's a good shout. All right. But this is a World Cup where, like, Eugene Gulakovic is not going to go to another World Cup.
I think he'll show faith in Ryan.
Yeah.
He'll leave him in there. He's shown faith in Halloran, so
yeah, that's true. Yeah, so
I think impact player.
We know that Ryan could still get a lot worse and still get picked.
I think he's probably identified Ryan. Well, he has. He's identified Ryan as our keeper for the future. Otherwise, he wouldn't be playing there. Now, do you want to risk majorly denting the confidence of your keeper for the next two tournaments by dropping him because he's had one bad save?
Yes.
I don't think that's enough to drop someone. When it's going to have long-term consequences.
Like you say, it wasn't the Russia howler. Mm. It was just a soft goal to concede. Mm. He'll be disappointed.
And it wasn't completely his whole fault. Yes, he had a part to play, but in the scheme of how the ball got to that situation in the first place, relatively small part.
Cool. We'll brush over the last couple of topics that I want to talk about because we're chalking up a lot of time. Ben Halloran, Pat, I know that you've got an axe to grind and you have done it, and I have to say I'm kind of starting to get on board the anti-Halloran bandwagon because we kept being told in the lead-up to the tournament this Ben Halloran could play because he's got blistering pace and pace terrifies defenders. I've not once seen him use this so-called blistering pace. He got the ball a couple of times in open space last night and put his foot on it and waited for support, which is not how you use pace. He was kind of quick when he chased down a ball, but everyone's quick without the ball. It's pace with the ball is what I understand he was picked for.
I think we all just misheard it. He doesn't have blistering pace. His blisters have grown with pace. That's why it's so slow.
Right, exactly.
I think he does have blistering pace. It's just when he tries to dribble the ball, he boots it 20 metres up the field and he's got to chase it before it goes out.
Yeah.
That's when you see the pace.
Yeah.
So much practice.
Yeah, I just thought like maybe Ben Halloran was responsible for starting these rumours about Ben Halloran's blistering pace. Get that Halloran in the squad.
Yeah.
I hear he's really quick. So
he must be showing something to train.
Oh, mate. Yeah, absolutely. He must be gunning training.
Or has naked photos of Ange
Absolutely.
Cheating on his wife or something.
Which we should...
I was going to say something else. But...
I love it. There's naked photos of him cheating on his wife compared to all those clothed photos you have of him cheating on his wife.
Yeah, but well, I was going to say something else, but
this is a children's show, I think.
That's all right. Christian's already thrown in the technical term for swerving the ball. I tweeted towards the end of the game that Halloran should be made to pay for his ticket to watch that game like the rest of the Socceroos fans who turned up to Porto Alegre. So, Ben Halloran, a lot of work to do. Whereas James Leckie's been a superstar.
James Leckie.
He's left Halloran and or just completely behind. And he was devastated at the end, Leckie, and gee, I felt for him because he'd given absolutely everything. Yeah.
What I love was the interview at the end with Ange, and you know the reporter was sort of like in a good mood, saying, great performance, this,
he
that, and the other.
Still wants to win, doesn't
he? Ange was devastated, because they truly believe they're going to win that game.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude we need. You know, it's not, this is not a Holger Osek, your damage control situation.
No, that's right.
This is, we're going to win this game, we're going to beat Spain, and we're going to qualify. And unfortunately, it didn't unravel. We still played really well, but the disappointment in his face, and the belief that he could have, that we actually could have won that game, bodes well for the future.
Cahill said in his interview straight away, look, we studied a lot of footage in the lead up this game and we thought we could beat them. And that, he wasn't just saying that. Like, you could tell these guys thought they could knock them off.
And what this all points to is, like, if we were in any other bloody group, we could go far in this tournament.
Absolutely. We've given two teams that will probably reach the final four of this tournament a bang hot go. So we're probably a quarterfinal standard team, which is just madness to think. When 2 weeks ago, everyone was saying, well, let's just not get beat 5-0 every game and that'll be a good tournament. So Ange is just an absolute magician.
It's funny because last World Cup, we were in the only group where both sides made the quarterfinals. So we were unfortunate in that regard because we probably should have qualified from that group too. And now here, as I said, we're playing two of the sides who are going to go very deep in the tournament. Mm. And I said, we've gone from, will the Socceroos score a single goal, to bloody hell, we could have gone really far in this tournament.
Well, it's gone from, will the Socceroos score a goal, to will we beat Spain and finally get a result that we deserve at this tournament, which is just madness.
And people aren't just saying that. Like, I genuinely believe we could probably beat Spain.
I honestly think, I watched them this morning. They were just dreadful. For a team that had to win to stay alive, that was about as pathetic as display. It was a real Holger Pim performance. It was shut up shop. We don't want to win. We just don't want to get beat too badly. And finally, we should touch on, we mentioned the commentary before, Craig Foster, some of his expert insight. I loved in the 91st minute when Australia had the ball at the back and he said, the ball has to go forward. Has to go forward. Thanks, Craig. Here I was thinking, keep it at the back. Keep it at the... What an idiot I was.
Mate.
Not going to score back there. It has to go forward. His other quote after the game that went massive on social media, if we had their players, we would have won the game.
We don't have to say anything.
Your
about
tax
that.
Dollars pay for him to. That's a government broadcaster he works for, ladies and gentlemen. But he also pointed out, they asked him what would be the secret to winning the World Cup, and he said the key to winning the World Cup is to qualify for the final, then win that match. So yeah, great insight again to Craig Foster. So as mentioned, Spain went down to Chile, which does officially end our tournament. It will be the Netherlands joining. Chile, sorry, I almost said Spain. Nope. In the round of 16, as well as Cameroon are also out after losing 4-0 to Croatia, which I like Croatia. I'm glad that they won so heavily because I want them to go through.
It's going to be interesting. If Cameroon can get a result against Brazil and Mexico and Croatia draw, Brazil are out as well.
I am saying that Cameroon are not going to get a result.
I don't know if they'll be at the next game. Yeah.
May not get the numbers. Fighting. Yeah, that's right. Maybe serial walkouts by the look of it.
Headbutts all around.
Yeah. So a tournament comes to a close on a competitive level for Australia and the reigning champion Spain. Maybe just a quick word for the end of the Spanish era. I think we all saw it come to an end this morning. There's no way they're bouncing back after that. That was a crash and burn sort of result, wasn't it?
Yes and no. I mean, we said the same thing about France 4 years ago.
I don't think we said that about France in the sense of it wasn't that much of a dynasty for France. Mm. You know, they made a final and then we're talking a team that's won the last three major tournaments. That's not easy to do. So I think that's probably the end of it.
Being Spain, I'm sure they've got a lot of juniors coming up. we should take the spots.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure
there's, they'll be a force next
I'm sure they won't be turning to Ben Halloran to run down the wing with blistering pace to get them back into the tournament. We should talk about our sponsors who make this show possible and bring it to you free on iTunes and thefootballsack.com. So you should thank them too by supporting them. They are Banking on Football. Do all your banking with a bank that cares about football. Bankingonfootball.com. Southern Cross University, who we record here in their fantastic studios, Arrivederci's Pizza in Brisbane. They are open 24/7 for the duration of the World Cup, and SMG Sports Management Group Australia.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys.
Fantastic friends of ours. We have a special guest coming up, as mentioned earlier in the show. It is Collingwood AFL footballer Lachie Keith, and he joins us after this. Joining us on the line is Collingwood footballer from the AFL, Lachie Keith. Our first non-football athlete to come on the podcast during the World Cup, so this is very exciting for us. Thank you very much for your time today, Lachie.
Thanks for having me, boys. It's something a little bit different, but hopefully I can give a good insight and see how we go.
We hope you can too. Why don't you start off by telling us your football background, mate, not your AFL background, obviously, your round ball background.
Yeah. I started playing footy as most kids would at the age of six, having a bit of a kick around with mates and sort of found out that wasn't too bad, so played it in a few rep sides and a few state sides and sort of academy stuff and along the way, but it was sort of all the way up until I was about 17 really, and that's when I sort of started getting into the footy. But yeah, played a lot of my football in Gympie, so that's about 2 hours north of Brizzy. Not the best of quality in Gympie, but sort of up the ranks a little bit and made my way into some of the state sides and that, where the footy's not too bad. But you know, I wasn't crash hot, which is why I sort of made the transition to AFL in the end. But you don't see too many sort of 200 plus centimetre blokes run around the football field, that's for sure.
Now, mate, you're obviously a talented sportsman all around. What actually, tell us your backstory, because it's an interesting story how you went from football to AFL. Can you tell the listeners all about that?
So I lived in Gympie in Queensland and then went to boarding school when I was 15 in Brizzy, Maris Ashgrove, and basically just started playing footy. There was a few boys in the dorm who followed the AFL, didn't really know too much about it. There was Brisbane Lions were floating around at that stage, but right in my football at that stage, and then basically just played to get out of last class on a Monday, you know, the AFL stuff, that is. So, and didn't play too many games because I tore a hammy and broke my nose in my first AFL game, so I didn't start real well.
Have you been watching the Football World Cup, mate? I know you are a football fan. Obviously, you have your football schedule where you have to sort of do your recovery sessions and your gym sessions, so you probably can't commit to staying up all night watching games. But have you seen much of it?
Yeah, I try to get up in the morning and, you know, watch the sort of the later game. I can't really justify too much of, you know, getting up, especially in the main training sessions and the game days, getting up at 1:30 in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning to watch games. But I got up this morning, dedicated Australian follower, so I got up this morning to watch and sort of kept it hush-hush when I got to the club this morning, but I struggled through training this morning, that's for sure.
So what did you make of the game, mate?
I'm probably like most uneducated soccer people, where I thought we might struggle in the World Cup, but from a guy who doesn't watch a whole lot of international football purely because I don't have the time to, I thought, you know, the guys have stepped up real well and played some good footy, sort of led by more experienced players with their leadership. I thought, you know, Jim Cahill and Bresciano, Milo Jedinek, and those guys were quite good. And then the younger fellas are just sort of falling in behind, I guess.
Now, the Herald Sun actually named you as centre-back in their AFL's World Cup 11 in their article there. So do you reckon if you're on the pitch, you could have stopped maybe one or two of those goals?
I saw that team, actually. I reckon there'd be there's a few blokes named who have probably never played soccer in their life, so we might struggle a bit against most teams. But I was never really good with the old header. I really struggled. I was pretty much... a little man in a big man's body. I tried to do all the skillful stuff, but I couldn't really nail that. So that was probably my downfall in the end. But I'll take it.
You're 204 centimeters tall. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And you reckon you weren't all that crash hot in the air?
Nah. Which is kind of like everyone thinks you should just rock up and slam a few home like Tim Cahill, but I was just rubbish. So I was no good trying to get a few cheapies out the edge of the box and all that kind of stuff.
The AFL is obviously you guys' physical fitness is sort of worked on to every tiny degree to try and get the best out of you. So you'd sort of probably appreciate someone like Tim Cahill, who's not the tallest. His vertical leap is unreal. He'd go all right in AFL, wouldn't he?
Yeah, that's a good point. He might be up for a chance to win the Toyota car at the end of the year for Mark of the Year, something like that. But he keeps sort of, for the size of the man, you know, his stature, he keeps impressing me. You know, how well he can head the ball. He's one of, you know, I'd be top handful of blokes in the world really at that skill set. But I reckon his natural fitness and ability would cross well with the AFL.
Mate, we've had two really good performances, as you mentioned. It wasn't just, you sort of said, as a non-expert, you didn't think we'd do real well. I think it was 100% of Australians didn't think we'd do real well, but we've punched well above our weight. Spain, on the other hand, have not done so. They're going home with the tail between their legs. Can you see us picking up a positive result against them to finish off?
Oh, I reckon on the back of their first two performances, I don't see sort of why not. I'm sure coming off as the world champions last time, they're not going to want to finish last in their group. So I'm sure they'll have a fair bit of pride in the way they go about it. So it's going to be a tough game again. But like what we've both said, you know, we wouldn't have thought our results would be, you know, where they are at the moment. And I think, why not? You know, it's a better dream, I guess. But it'll be hard. But I think, is it Cahill? He won't be available.
Yeah, he's out. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Did
Mashiato
pick up an injury? Did I hear that as well?
I don't know. He definitely went off earlier than we were expecting him to go off. I haven't heard anything official since then, but certainly hope not.
Yeah. So, well, fingers crossed. I reckon more than anything, they just want to put up a good performance, whether they win or lose. They won't want to go home with zero losses, but I think more than anything, they'll want to sort of, you know, build again and show, you know, that they're not sort of just easy beats.
And you're in action this weekend yourself, mate, against Hawthorn at the MCG. How you reckon you'll go?
Fingers crossed I still get picked. Disappointing loss last week against the Western Bulldogs, but and we haven't fared real well against Hawthorn in the last sort of half a dozen games, so and we know they're a top quality opposition, so we're gonna have to be at our best to sort of win, but we feel like we're building the belief that we can compete against, you know, the top echelon of teams, and feel like we've got a good game plan in place. So, a bit like the Australians, I guess. I hope we can sort of put in a good performance and get back on the winners list.
Good on you, mate. Thanks so much for your time today.
Cheers, boys. Appreciate it.
All the best. Thanks again to Lockie Keefe for joining us from the Collingwood Football Club. If you're interested in supporting the Collingwood Football Club, that you can inquire about memberships at collingwoodfc.com.au and join the other 76,000 people that have done so already. They're really struggling for members there at that Collingwood FC. We should wrap up the show, guys, because it's massive and people are going to have to finish listening to this one before they can download tomorrow's, which is almost time to record.
Recharged.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining me, Pat. Thanks for joining me, Christian.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining me, listeners. See ya.
You've been listening to the Football Sack Podcast for Brazil, brought to you by Banking on Football.